Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, at the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is June 17, 2014, out of Sibian 22,018. We'll start our second service today with a song entitled, Beneath the Cross of the Yahshua. Beneath the cross of Yahshua, I fain would take my stand. The shadow of a mighty rock within the vivid land, a home within the wilderness, a rest is upon the way from the burning of the noontide heat and the burden of the day. Upon the cross of Yahshua mine eye at times can see the very time from the one who suffered there for me, and from my smitten heart with tears to wonders I confess the wonders of redeeming love and my unworthiness. I take to cross a shadow for my abiding place. I ask no farther sunshine than the sunshine of His grace. Content to let the world go by, to know no gain alone, my sinful self, my holy shame, my glory of the cross. Part 7 of Matthew 24, we're still in 11, symbolic code. Number 12, we're on page 16. It says, first we're going to refer to a prayer thought taken from Jeremiah 33. It says, moreover, the word of the Yahweh came unto Jeremiah a second time, while he was yet shut up in the court of the prison, saying, thus saith the Yahweh, the maker thereof, the Elohim that formed it, to establish it, Yahweh is His name. Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things that thou knowest not. For thus saith Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, concerning the houses of this city, and concerning the houses of the kings of Judah, which are thrown down by the mount, and by the sword. They come to fight with the Chaldeans, but it is to fill them with the dead bodies of men, whom I have slain in mine anger and in my fury, and for all whose wickedness I have hid my face from this city. Behold, I will bring it health and cure, and I will cure them, and will reveal unto them the abundance of peace and truth. And I will call the captivity of Judah and the captivity of Israel to return, and will build them as at the first. And I will cleanse them from all their iniquity whereby they have sinned against me, and I will pardon all their iniquity whereby they have sinned and whereby they have transgressed against me. And it shall be to me a name of joy, a praise, and an honor before all the nations of the earth, which shall hear all the good that I do unto them. And they shall fear and tremble for all the goodness and for all the prosperity that I procure unto it. Thus saith Yahweh. Again there shall be heard in this place, which you shall which you say shall be desolate without the man and without the beast, even in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, that are desolate without man and without inhabitant and without beast. The voice of joy and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the voice of them that shall say, praise the Yahweh of the host, for the Yahweh is good, for his mercy endureth forever, and of them that shall bring the sacrifice of praise into the house of Yahweh. For I will cause to return the captivity of the land, as at the first, saith Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, again in this place, which is desert, without man and without beast, and in all the cities thereof, shall be an habitation of shepherds, causing their flocks to lie down. In the cities of the mountains, in the cities of the vale, and in the cities of the south, and in the land of Benjamin, and in the places about Jerusalem, and in the cities of Judah, shall the flocks pass again under the hands of him that tilleth them, saith Yahweh. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will perform that good thing which I have promised unto the house of Israel and to the house of Judah. In those days and at that time will I cause a branch of the righteousness. So what's the branch of righteousness? What's the branch of righteousness? The house of David. Righteousness is taught and practiced by law, but not by faith in the blood of Yahshua, but by the Spirit. And so therefore the branch of righteousness that grew up unto the kingdom started at Gilead Center in 1970. It was planted. Okay. Says, in those days, and at that time will I cause a branch of righteousness, the house of David, to grow up unto David. Okay, so you have to have the sanctuary back into full operation. You've got to have somebody that's performing their vows faithfully, living up to all the truth that they have. And that's how the branch grows up under David. And he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. Okay. So he's going to grow up under David. And this David is antitypical Elijah. And so, and he shall cause, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. So the righteous branch grows up to David, and this he is a pronoun for David. And he shall execute judgment and righteousness. In those days shall Judah, the lawgiver, house of David, be saved, and Jerusalem shall dwell safely. That's a headquarters, that's a capital for the city, called the City of David. That's what it originally called, City of David. And it's where the kingly palace ground that David established when he took that mount there and drove out those Jebusites, took charge of that city and that mount. He called it the City of David and the Mount Zion. And this is the name wherewith he shall be called, or she shall be called. Okay, so here's his she. This is the bride. This branch of righteousness that grew up under David. This is the bride of the Lamb. This branch of righteousness is 144,000. Yahshua are righteous. And it said, this is the name wherewith she shall be called, the Yahshua are righteousness. So she's going to be called that. It's a branch of righteousness, but she's going to be called the Yahshua are righteousness. For thus saith the Yahshua, David shall never want a man to sit upon the throne of the house of David. Neither shall the priest, the Levites, want a man before me to offer burnt offerings and to kindle meat offerings and to do sacrifice continually. And the word of Yahweh came unto Jeremiah, saying, thus saith Yahweh, if you can break my covenant of the day and my covenant of the night, that there should not be day and night in their season, then may also my covenant be broken with David my servant, that he should not have his son to reign upon his throne, and with the Levites, the priests, and my ministers. As the host of the heaven cannot be numbered, neither the sand of the sea measured, So will I multiply the seed of David, my servant, and the Levites that minister unto me. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came unto Jeremiah, saying, Considerest thou not what this people hath spoken, saying, The two families which the Yahweh hath chosen, he hath even cast them off? Thus they have despised my people, that they should be no more a nation before them. Thus saith the Yahweh, If my covenant be not with day and night, and if I have not appointed the ordinances of the heaven and the earth, then will I cast away the seed of Jacob and David my servant, so that I will not take any of his seed to be ruler over the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for I will cause their captivity to return and have mercy on them. But we are indeed today the seed of David. And as our prayer thought, we're going to go now into a regular theme, 11 Symbolic Code number 12, we're on page 16. It says, moreover in the parable we are studying today, did the Yahshua come to the earth where the 10 virgins were? Yes, he did, for he came where both the unworthy and the worthy virgins were. So now, we were having a question the other day about Rose, about Yahshua's first advent, or second advent. Talking about the second advent. When is he going to come? And so the contention was that he comes in the clouds, and every eye shall see him. That's his second coming. But what is this coming here? Where he comes or where these worthy and unworthy virgins are at? Okay, I contend that coming took place when he closed out the judgment of the dead in 2002 and started the judgment of the living. Let's continue. If he came to earth and had a door of his own to shut or to open, that would indicate that he had a place of his own. Then he will come to his kingdom. And unless the guests enter on time through the door, they will be disappointed when they knock and the door will not be opened unto them. Now, we have a very interesting scenario here. For in 1999, the prophet Brother Johnson said, the voice spoke to him and told him to lock the doors at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock on the solemn assembly. That was the next day. And he said, boy, that was the strangest thing he ever had happen to him. So he called his son, he said, told him what happened, and he said, now you be there, be here at 9 o'clock in the morning. Be in the church before 9 o'clock strikes. And he said, get your son Rodney, which is also an ordained minister of the church, and said, you make sure, I think Verlis called him. And anyway, he called Daniel, his dad, said, be there today. And so his son promptly replied and said, sound like you're trying to run everybody off. I think I'll have a sick out. I think I'll just stay home. So his son didn't pay much attention to his dad claiming that a voice spoke to him and locked the doors at 9 and 3. That's your daily. That's your third hour of the day and your ninth hour of the afternoon. That's your sacred hours. And tell everybody in the congregation to be in their places and on this day at those hours. And sure enough, he called and told everybody, almost everybody. And I was there way before the door, you know, before the time. My wife and I were there. So the bottom line is that when it was all over with and his son and his grandson didn't show up, I promptly told him that they had been cut off, that the door was closed on. And Brother Johnson had contention with that for a long time with me. First for 2 or 3 years. Where did I get the authority to say that that his sons were locked out and the doors were closed on? Well, here it is right here. It says, then he will come to his kingdom, and unless the guests enter on time, through the door, They will be disappointed when they knock, and the door will not be open to them. Since this coming of the bridegroom is obviously not the visible second coming of Yahshua to take to heaven his people who shall meet him in the air, we should be able to find in the Bible something more about it. Let us now turn to Matthew 25:31-32. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations. And he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. Did these verses say that the Son of Man is going to come down on a cloud to where the just risen dead, along with the living saints, will meet him in the air, as in 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17? Is that what we just read? No. It says here, at this coming, he will gather all nations before him, and then he will sit down on a throne and separate them. He will put the goats on the left and sheep on the right. Moreover, he will tell each of the two classes that they have or have not done that caused them to be thus judged and separated. Do you not see clearly why we need the extra oil, the message of the judgment for the living? So I contend with you that this is Yahshua's second coming, when he comes to judge the nations, not to raise the dead and take them to heaven. Because the thing is, when he comes to judge the nations, it's right at the beginning, it's at the time that he comes and gathers 144,000 to start the judgment of the nations. And then after the nations have been judged, he resurrects all the dead clear back to Adam, and then they come in. And then that's who is gathered up in the clouds to meet him in the air. But where does he resurrect them from? Wherever they died in the world. Wherever they were buried. And he gathers them up in the cloud. And he just says, and so shall we ever be with the Yahshua. Didn't say, and then he's going to get them into the clouds and then take them to heaven. He says, and so shall we ever be with Yahshua. So what is he doing? He's getting them in the cloud, and he's taking them to the holy city, which is in Jerusalem, here on this earth. Okay? We, as the Adventists, have been preaching the judgment for 100 years or more, and yet never, even for a moment, did we see that these parables were talking about the judgment for the living. So you see, when Yahshua comes in the second advent, first he judges the nation, then after he gets them all judged, separated, then he resurrects all the righteous, because he's already here. But when he resurrects the righteous, he has to get in the clouds and in his traveling throne, a little bit above the world, and he has to travel around the world resurrecting all the righteous. So whenever they resurrect, they're called to meet him in the clouds. They're caught up. And then he transports them to the promised land, the land of Israel, that has been prepared for them. And with the holy city there waiting for them. If we never saw it before, we should now be able to see clearly that this judgment included the separation of the righteous and the wicked. You cannot say that the judgment we are reading about in Matthew 25 is the judgment which is to take place during the millennium, because his people are not then among the nation. There is positively no escaping the conclusion that it takes place in the time of the judgment for the living, when both the righteous and the wicked are commingled on the earth, since moreover this work of the separation goes on among the people themselves. It is clear that it is not a work to be done in the heaven, but it is a work to be done on the earth. Then shall two be in the field, one shall be taken, the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken, the other left. Matthew 24:40-41. Some call that the capture, or the rapture, but it is quite different than what they think it is. Now we plainly see it, yes, sir, in Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living. And in connection with this subject, we find that Malachi says the very same thing, namely, that after a messenger has prepared the way, the Yahshua will suddenly come to his temple to purify it. That's Malachi 3:1. Well, that took place in 2002. When he comes, it is not to judge the dead in the heavenly sanctuary, but to judge the living in the earthly sanctuary. So he has to come and do the judgment here on earth. And then he appears in the clouds after he resurrects the righteous and gathers them up in the clouds. Okay, and if the Yeshua is going to sit on his throne on the earth and gather the nation before him and judge and separate the people, where specifically is Yeshua going to sit? In Daniel 2, we find the description and interpretation of the great image of which the king of the Babylon saw in a dream. We as the Adventists, and for that matter, not only we Adventists, but other Bible students as well, recognize that this image represents the nations of the world from Babylon's time down to today. We also understand that the whole kingdoms represent the nations in existence today. Now let us read Daniel 2:44-45. And in the days of these kings, that's in the Tol kings, shall the Elohim of the heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hand, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Elohim has made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel here describes how the earth's governments come to their end, not how the earth comes to its end, for he interpreted the stone to be the kingdom, which is the everlasting kingdom of David, and it is Elohim's kingdom that will smite the nations, not Yahshua coming from heaven to take up the same. As the Adventists have taught, Jeremiah calls the kingdom Elohim's battle axe, Jeremiah 51:20. What plainer language could be used to say that the kingdom is going to be set up before the nations come to their end? The trouble some have believing this is not because of the language that the Bible used. Verily, with our preconceived ideas that were built up throughout the years, and the only way we can drive out our former erroneous ideas is to believe just what the Bible says. Now let us turn to Ezekiel 36:17-19. Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doing. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. Wherefore, I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land, and for their idols wherewith they had polluted it. And I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through the country. According to their way and according to their doings, I judge them. This says that because of the evils of the people, Elohim dispersed them throughout the country. Ezekiel 36:20. And when they entered unto the heathen, whither they went, they profaned my holy name. And they said unto them, these are the people of the Yahweh, and are gone forth out of his land. They profaned his name when it was said of them that they are the people of the Yahweh gone out of his land. Is it not profaning Elohim's name for the Gentiles to have driven Elohim's people out of their own land and become rulers over them after Elohim has so miraculously brought them there and set them up to be the greatest kingdom, even his kingdom on the earth? Could not the Gentiles feel that they had successfully defeated Elohim's purpose for them? Elohim's people have brought this great curse upon themselves through their disobedience, thus profaned Elohim's holy name in the midst of the heathen where they went. It has been brought up to me many times that the Gentiles took Elohim's people captive because Elohim was not able to defend his own kingdom, and therefore he was unable to fulfill his promise to Israel. Thus was his name profaned among the heathen, all because of the disobedience of the Elohim's own people. Now I've got a comment to make here. Advent started in 1844. They came to 1890 and a great test came to them in the form of a message and two messengers, Jones and Wagner. Okay? So now, when the Adventists rose up and because of this double leadership they had in their midst, the strongest leadership was the ones that had infiltrated the Adventist Church. These were not members that grew up in the Adventist Church, but these were people that came from outside and infiltrated it from the Catholic Church. They took over the General Conference presidency and the highest officers in the Adventist Church. And they caused the laity to reject, for the most part, Jones and Wagner's message of righteous by faith in 1888 to 1890. So Yeshua promptly brought that feeding pasture to a close. And he gives Prophet Ellen G. White a message and says, "Tell the people that they'll not receive another ray of light from me until they make use of the light they've already received." So, not another ray of light was ever sent to the Adventist by Ellen G. White. So she lived 25 years, and she wrote Counsels on Reproof and Admonition of the Testimonies of Ministers for the ministers. And she wrote Reproof and Admonitions, all she did, and that was for those Jesuit devils that had infiltrated the Adventist Church and taken over the leadership and filled all the pulpits with Jesuits and false teachers in their schools and everything. So, all they got was condemnation from her. Where'd the laity go? Those that stayed with Ellen G. White, they worshipped in the Adventist churches, continued to worship in the Adventist churches, listened to those false preachers that was occupying the pulpits after 1890. There's a lot of true Adventist preachers who are still occupying the pulpits, don't get me wrong. But they didn't have any new light from Ellen G. White to give to the people. So no more new light came to the Adventists until 1930. They had a 40-year spiritual fast. Well, Mount Basin, the first feeding pasture for the Adventists, was closed up in 1890, and so for 40 years, the Adventists didn't get one ray of light. New light. Oh yeah, Yahweh sent them new light through M.L. Andreessen, Taylor G. Barnes, V.T. Hartog. Yeah, he raised up messengers during that 40-year spiritual fast for Judah. But it didn't benefit those devils that was running the Adventist Church, those Jesuits, and those people that believed them. Only those Adventists that believed, Ellen G. White and Jones and Wagner's message, they're the only ones benefited by the sincere Adventist ministers for the next 40 years, from 1890-1930. So, when the next feeding pasture opened up, V.T. Hartog started in 1930 with the Rod, Mount Carmel, new feeding pasture, and he led that until he died 25 years later, 1955. Now, what happened when V.T. Hartog died? His flock was scattered upon every mountaintop. Okay, fulfilling Zechariah 13's prophecy. Smite the shepherd, the sheep will scatter. Why do they scatter? because Vichai didn't have a 100% interpretation of the fulfillment of the prophecies, for the simple reason he was in the 10th parabolic hour, and the prophecies he was trying to interpret to come to their close with him, and he was teaching that he's in the 11th parabolic hour, and that we were in the last hour, and that all the prophecies now of Daniel and Revelation and all the prophets is going to dovetail into his movement, and that he's going to be the last prophet, and he was the Elijah, and all this and that, and he's going to interpret all the Latter-day prophecies and bring them to their fulfillment. Well, because he had a misconception on the Bible prophecy and their fulfillment, he didn't know the time that he was in, and so he falsely said that he was in the 11th and last hour. He was in the 10th, 2 hours removed from the last hour. And so when he died, Yahweh dispersed all of the shepherd rod people into the four corners of the earth. That's what he's always done with his people. Whenever they don't live up to all the present truth that's given to them, then he scatters them out of their land. The land for Mount Carmel was Waco, Texas. He scattered them all out of there. Then 1970 comes along, the rod period is over, new feeding pasture, Mount Gilead, and it had its reign for 33 years that I was with. We had a separation, a judgment took place, and he separated the old leadership and retired them, got rid of them, and the people that were following that leadership scattered to who knows where. So either disobedience, apostatizing, going back into idolatry, if they indeed have ever come out of idolatry, went back into it, joined Babylon, and so Yahweh brought them in. Well, I'm just reading to you here in Ezekiel 36. He says, and when they entered into the heathen, whither they went, they proclaimed my holy name. When they said to them, these are the people of Yahweh and are gone forth out of his land. Okay. Says here in Ezekiel 36:17-19. Son of man, or when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doing. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. Wherefore I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land and for their idols wherewith they had polluted it, and I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through their countries according to their way and according to their doings, I judged them. So what happened to the rod, with the end of the rod? And they wouldn't come to their end at the appointed time that Yahweh had appointed for them in a 40-year period. They continued on. And so what happened? By 1993, 23 years after their time was up, the government comes out and kills everybody on the property and burns down their compound. That's what Yahweh thought about them. Okay, so when Vertus wouldn't come to his end, he just laid him in his grave at a certain time. Got rid of him. Okay, so this is what happens when the house of Israel don't live up to all the doctrines given to them. And they start eating and drinking with the drunken and start cavorting and participating in the amusements with the heathen around them. Then Yahweh brings them in and scatters them all over the place. Let's continue now on page 21. It says Ezekiel 36:21-22. But I had plenty for my holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the heathen, or whether they went. Therefore say unto the house of Israel, thus saith the Abraham, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for my holy name's sake, which you have profaned among the heathen, whether you went. It was because Elohim could no longer tolerate the sins of his people, that he, through the Gentiles, had to disperse them. He did not know that, though now Elohim says he will do something about it for his holy name's sake, not because his people are good. The next verse states plenty what he will do. Ezekiel 36:23-24. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which ye have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Yahweh, says Yahweh Elohim, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen, and gather you out of all countries, and will bring you into your own land. Unto those who ask how Elohim can defend his name, now since the heathen were dispersed throughout the nations, the ancient kingdom of his people, we need only to read unto them that what Elohim here says, that he will gather his people back from all countries and show them and the heathen that he will yet honor his name by sanctifying himself in them before the heathen. Ezekiel 36:25-27. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh. And I'll put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. Since all of this takes place when the Elohim gathers his people from among the heathen, then no one can dodge the fact that unless we go into the land where the cleansing will take place, we will not be cleansed and we will not receive the new heart and Elohim's spirit. After we have been taken from among the heathen, Elohim will sprinkle clean water upon us to cleanse it. By this we are to understand that until Elohim gathers us from among the heathen, we cannot be clean. After he cleanses us, we will be without spot for the judgment time. We must remember, is a cleansing time as well as a separating time. Okay, so now we've had this first cleansing already, 2002 at Kermit, Gilead Center. The judgment for the living takes place when Elohim cleanses his people from all their filthiness and puts within them his spirit and hearts of flesh. This work is to be done for his people after Elohim has returned them to their own land. Okay. Now, this has already been taking place with the house of David here. And typical David. This here, judgment for the living. We entered into that in 2002. And he cleanses people, this has been a cleansing process. We weren't cleansed the moment we were taken out of Gilead Center in 2002. This has been an ongoing cleansing thing. The judgment for the living takes place when Elohim cleanses people from all their filthiness and puts within them his spirit and hearts of flesh. Okay, we're still working on this. This work is to be done for his people after Elohim has returned them to their own land. Okay. So it says, this chapter tells us that we will never be clean until Elohim gathers us from all the heathen and makes us what we ought to be. The devil, however, wants to convince us that there is to be neither a land to which Elohim's people are to go, nor a cleansing. Let us read further. Ezekiel 36:28. And you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your father, and you shall be my people, and I'll be your Elohim. For the land that Elohim gave unto our fathers is Palestine. Because the children of Israel were dispersed, his name was profaned. And to show that he indeed rules over the heathen, the earth and the people, he will get out his people from the nations and sit them right back in their own land and sanctify himself in them. Okay, Ezekiel 36:29-30. I will also save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the corn and will increase it, and lay no famine upon you, and I will multiply the fruit of the tree and the increase of the field, that you shall receive no more reproach of famine among the heathen. Now I want to read to you what Ezekiel chapter 20 has to say about whether we're cleansed before we go back to the land, or we cleanse this side of the land. We have to be cleansed before you can enter back into the land. So Vitiha says, no, we won't have this cleansing until we get back to the land. That's what he says right here. He says, the judgment for the living takes place when Elohim cleanses his people from all their filthiness and puts within them his spirit and hearts of flesh. This work is to be done for his people after Elohim has returned them to their own land. Okay. Well, this is true. Now, the land that he's returned me to is this here hill countries of Judea, where I once used to, where I spent in this here heart of Texas area. I spent 20 years in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then ended up back in Kermit, West Texas for 20 years, and then I'm back here, been back here for 11 years. So it says in Ezekiel 20, start with 31, for when you offer your gifts, when you make your sons to pass through the fire, you pollute yourself with all your idols, even unto this day, and shall I be inquired by you, O house of Israel? As I live, says Yahweh, I will not be inquired by you. And that which cometh into your mind shall not be at all, that you say, we will be as the heathen, as the families of the countries, to serve wood and stone. As I live, says Yahweh, Elohim, surely with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm with fury poured out, will I rule over you. And I will bring you out from the people, and will gather you out of the countries wherein you are scattered, with a mighty hand, and with a stretched out arm, and with fury poured out. And I will bring you into the wilderness of the people. Now, the wilderness of people, it means where all of the races of the conglomeration of people from all over the world are at. And that's right here in the United States proper, in the Western Hemisphere. And more notably in Texas. And there will I plead with you face to face. For this is where he brought his servant Elijah David, right here in the hill countries of Judea, here in Texas. And he says, I'm going to bring you into the wilderness of the people, and there will I plead with you face to face, like as I pleaded with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt. So he said, in the land of Egypt. And he says, so will I plead with you, saith the Yahweh. And I will cause you to pass under the rod, and will bring you into the bond of covenant. Okay, so that wilderness of Sinai, it was the wilderness of Egypt. And I've been teaching that that was a wilderness that belongs to the land of Israel. Okay. That was the wilderness of Egypt. Let's go on. Verse 38. And I will purge out from among you the rebels and them that transgress against me. I will bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn, and they shall not enter into the land of Israel. And you shall know that I am the Yahweh. As for you, O house of Israel, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, go ye serve ye every one his idols, and hereafter also, if you will not hearken unto me, but pollute ye my holy name no more with your gifts and with your idols. For in mine holy mountain, in the mountain of the height of Israel, which is a mountain, this little stone that was seen on Mount Thy Hands, represents the kingdom of David here on earth, everlasting kingdom, goes into a mountain and fills the whole earth. So this is your holy mountain, in the mountain of the height of Israel. And where did the little stone start out at? Started out at Kermit, Texas, West Texas, out in the wilderness, out in the desert. Israel, all of them in the land, serve me. There will I accept them, and there will I require your offerings and the first fruits of your oblations with all your holy things. And there shall the house of Israel, all of them in the land, what land? The land of Texas. This is where he brought them. This is the wilderness of the people. This is where he purged out the rebels and promised that they will not enter into the land of Israel. Okay. So he says, all of them in the land serve me. There will I accept them, and there will I require your offerings and the first fruits of your oblation with all your holy things. Now this is talking about the land of Israel proper, granted. But nevertheless, whenever he sanctifies us and brings forth 144,000, it's going to be right here in the wilderness of the people. And then he's going to purge out the rebels from here, and then what's going to happen to the rebels? He's going to call them to pass back over to a stronghold, and you can go read Isaiah chapter 30, verse 9, to confirm that. It says, actually it's in Isaiah 31:9. It says, and he shall pass over to his stronghold for fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the ensign, saith the Yahweh, whose fire is in Zion and his furnace is in Jerusalem. So all those that are here in the land of Texas, set aside as a righteous nation, they have come into here, and he said they're going to pass back over their stronghold for fear of the ensign. The ensign is where Yahshua and his servant David is set up in their kingdom. Okay, that kingdom is set up right here in Liberty Hill, Texas. And so you're in for a good treat, folks. And let us go back now to our reading of the Shepherd's Rod. We're on the 11th symbolic code, number 12. We're on page 24. It says, if the land of our fathers in this chapter means heaven, there would be no heathen in existence to witness any more reproach of the famine, and thus the last clause of Ezekiel 36:30 would be unnecessary and meaningless. So Ezekiel 36:31, then shall you remember your own evil ways and your doing that were not good, and shall loathe yourself in your own sight for your iniquities and for your abomination. After Elohim has returned his people to their own land and changed their hearts and put within them the Spirit, then will they hate their own evil doing. They will be genuinely sorry for them. This is the revival and reformation which Elohim calls for and which he himself will work in his people. Yeah, this revival and reformation starts right here where the kingdom of David is set up. And it goes east and it goes west around the world. You have to have something to harvest the Western Hemisphere. They represent half of the world. Now, let us turn to the next chapter of Ezekiel 37:15-24. For the word of Yahweh came again unto me, saying, and moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companion. Then take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companion, and join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in mine and thine hand. Now here it is that Ezekiel is making the prophecy. But when these two sticks are joined together here in the 12th hour, Ezekiel is not here to join them together. So who is this son of man that is to do this? You're going to find out that this is antitypical Elijah. Okay. He says, so it says that you are to take the stick of Ephraim for all the house of Israel, his companion, and join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in thy hand. And when the children of thy people shall speak unto thee, saying, wilt thou not show us what thou meanest by thee? Say unto them, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his fellows, that's your 10 tribe, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in mine hand. And this is Yahweh talking. He said, they're going to be one in mine hand. And the sticks whereon thou writest shall be in thine hand. before their eyes. Now, who is this? Is this Ezekiel going to be resurrected here in the 12th hour? Is he going to be the one resurrected to do these two sticks? No. This is going to be the living prophet Elijah that's been given this here commission to do this. And say unto them, this is the Elijah David, that is, and say unto them, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, where they be gone, and will give them on every side, and bring them into their own land, and I'll make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel. Where were those mountains of Israel today formed at? Those mountains of Israel came into the fulfillment of the prophecy right here in the United States, and those mountains were those seven churches of Asia, starting with Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2 and ending in Revelation 3:14 with Laodicea, round out the seven churches that represents these mountains of Israel. And they were born right as the prophecy was brought forth right here in the United States. And starting with the seventh church, Laodicea, that identifies the Adventist church and her movements. Okay? So I'll make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel. And the mountains of Israel are established right here in the United States. Okay? And one king shall be king unto them all, and there shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all. Neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgressions. But I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them. So shall they be my people, and I will be their Elohim. And David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they all shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. But don't you think David earned the position to be king over all of Israel? And not only that, but David established himself king over all of the land, even over the heathens round about Israel. He conquered all the heathen round about Israel, not only in the land. He conquered them and drove them out of the land, and then he conquered all of those outside the borders of Israel. And because of his delivering Israel from Goliath, Yahweh, he proved himself. First, he proved himself by protecting his little lambs, and he had no fear whatsoever to go after the bear and the lion. And so he proved himself courageous there. And so Yahweh says, well, I can use this man now to deliver Israel, the armies of Israel. So he brought him in and had him to accept the challenge of Goliath. And he defeated Goliath, representing the beast back then. Goliath represented the beast that ruled that was ruling the world. Okay. So the only thing standing in the way of Goliath from ruling the whole world was that little shepherd boy, David. So he then had King Saul defeated and all the army of Israel defeated by just his presence, his sure presence, and the fact that Yahweh had withdrawn his spirit from King Saul. So Goliath, he only had one stumbling block, and that was a little shepherd boy. And whenever finally he got a challenge from the camp of Israel, it was the little shepherd boy that had come into camp, wasn't even a member of the army, wasn't even a soldier in King Saul's army, he was just a little shepherd boy at the slingshot. Filled with the Spirit of Yahweh by the anointing of Samuel the prophet. So Yahweh chose the little shepherd boy to deliver Israel, and that's what defeated the beast that was ruling over all the world back then. Goliath and the Philistines were the strongest people in all the world. There were seven nations in the land of Israel. And Goliath and the Philistines were the strongest ones. And so, if they subdue Israel and take them over, then they rule the whole world. Okay, antitypical David, then, he comes to the forefront again today. Well, it says right here, when Yahweh cleanse his people, he said, and David my servant shall be king over them, and they all shall have one shepherd. For the ancient kingdoms of Judah and Israel were dispersed. Now, however, the Yahweh says that he will bring them back to their own land and join them into one kingdom, where he will sanctify himself in them. When Elohim does this with his people, the heathen will learn who Elohim is and what are his purposes in the earth. I believe that the subject of the kingdom is one of the plainest of all subjects. In fact, the scriptures dealing with it actually need no interpretation. If we believe what the Bible says, for it plainly states that what it means, just what it means, and it is in the perfect harmony throughout its prophecies, parables, and symbols. For the only trouble there could be is that we have put an erroneous idea into our mind that there is to be no kingdom of Elohim on the earth before his second coming, and that idea has to be taken out, for it is unscriptural. Brother Daniel, too, talks of the kingdom of Elohim, saying that it shall not be left unto other people, but it will stand forever and will grow and fill the whole earth. Though there will be only 144,000 kept by the Elohim's own might and taken to Mount Zion, yet they, as servants and as the first fruits, Revelation 7:1-8 and Revelation 14:1-5, are together in the great multitude which no man could number, of Revelation 7:9-10. Thus will they enlarge the kingdom that is founded to fill the earth. That is what the Yahweh purposes to do with his people. If we would be among these wise virgins, we will not fight against Elohim setting up his kingdom. In other words, if we would be among these wise virgins of the 144,000, then it says we will not fight against Elohim setting up his kingdom, but rather we will study about it and thus procure the extra oil. We will work for it, and we will also certainly with understanding pray as Yahshua himself taught us. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in the earth as it is in the heaven. Okay, so it says, okay, now I'm going to read this little poem here and then bring this this sermon to a close with a song. O Yahshua, I have promised. It says, O Yahshua, thou hast promised to all who follow thee, that where thou art in glory, there shall thy servant be. And Yahshua, I have promised to serve thee unto the end, to give me grace to follow my master and my friend. John E. Bode wrote that little poem. Now this brings a close of our study session. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archives. Hear this message and more. We'll close now with a song. Okay.
The divine of love's excelling joy of heaven to earth come down, fixing us the humble dwelling of thy faithful mercy's crown. Yahshua, God of compassion, pure unbounded love the heart, visit us with thy salvation in their every trembling heart. Breathe, oh breathe, thy loving spirit into every troubled heart breast. Let us all in thee inherit, let us find the promised rest. Take away our guilty sinning, our friend, our maker be. In the faith at its beginning, set our hearts at liberty. Come, Almighty, to deliver, let
peace we receive. Suddenly, return and never, never more thy temple sleep. If it would be always blessing, serve thee as thy host above. Pray and praise thee without ceasing, glory in thy perfect love. And is then the new creation, pure and spotless let us be. Let us see thy great salvation, perfectly restored in thee. Change from glory into glory, thou in heaven we take our place. Shall we cast our crowns before thee, blessed in wonder, love, and praise.